Let's get started now that we know that recording is in progress. And yeah. Welcome everyone to our retreat. Some of you joining us for the first time, and some of you have been with us last night and are with us again now. So very warm welcome to all of us who are here. And also if there are other people who are on the retreat and are not in this particular session, they're part of our community, retreat community as well, so we can bear them in mind. So we'll have this session together and we will I'll talk for a bit to start with, so you can settle in such a way that it's comfortable for you to listen and just reflect on what's being said. And then we'll have a period of meditation, and then we'll follow that with a period of reflection and probably chant Amoghasiri mantra towards the end and just sit at the end of the session. So that's what will be ahead of us for the next hour and a half. And it'll be in the afternoon that we will have our groups and opportunities to share with each other in groups. So yeah, I want to start by saying, you know, yesterday when we left at the end of the night, last night, I was reflecting on the length of days. And when we finished, I was kind of aware, I was talking about midnight skies. And when we finished and I looked out of the window, the sun was still shining. So it took some time for the midnight sky to emerge. And really, in our imagination, so we'll have to bring a lot of imagination into this because we've got such long days and the sun is sort of out teasing us through wherever we are, through the windows, window panes. So we'll have to use our imagination to be in the land of Amoghasiri. And really, when we are talking about the archetypal Buddhists and the archetypal Buddhas, it is a lot to do also with our imagination. It's to do with us putting ourselves, expanding our minds in a way that it can just go a little bit beyond our frontiers as we know. So it's all good practice in that way. And with Amoghasiri, we are in a very particular landscape. So the landscape that we're in is a deep velvet blue midnight sky with pine trees. And it's very atmospheric under the cloak of the night. And it might become a little bit more clear why Amoghasiri might be associated with this particular part of the night. But if you were to catch a glimpse of Amoghasiri through traveling through that velvet blue sky, midnight sky, he would be on a chariot and he would be seated on a green lotus. So you would see this figure, this dark green Buddha, dressed in a scarlet robes. And there would be this light reflecting from his body or shining, radiating from the body. And that really transforms that scene, the midnight scene, makes it very much radiant and clear. And in his right hand, as Bodhilila was saying yesterday, he's got this real powerful gesture of a Abhaya mudra. So it's this fearlessness, mudra that he's associated with. And it's a really powerful gesture because it banishes darkness and fears of the night. And in the left hand, there is this mysterious emblem, a 2 diamond thunderbolts. And it's thunderbolts crossed and fused together. And we'll look into the imagery of that a little bit later today. So the figure of Amoghasiddhi is very mysterious, very ungraspable, probably one of the most mysterious figures out of the 5 different Buddhas. And it's very much associated with power and energy, but that is very subtle and it can be hidden. And maybe we can unravel that a little bit in the morning. So before I do anything, I want to start with a poem by Robert Frost. And you probably, some of you might know this poem. It's quite a famous poem. So the poem goes, 2 roads diverged in a yellow wood. And sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted to wear. Though as for that the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads unto way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere, ages and ages hence, 2 roads diverged in a wood. And I took the one less travelled by. And that has made all the difference. So this poem is, it caught my imagination in my late teens. So it's been around with me for decades. And it frequently pops up throughout years. And I thought it was really pertinent when thinking about Amoghasiddhi, because Amoghasiddhi is the being, he's the head of the karma family, so head of action. So for me, actions are associated with choices. And what that means is that when we take certain choices or actions in a way that makes us weave a particular pattern in our lives. So in some ways, our lives are about roads taken, but also about roads that were half taken and then maybe abandoned, and maybe roads that were not taken. And as we go through that life, and certainly that's the case for me, what I'm learning is to cultivate equanimity or sense of acceptance and peace around some of the choices and some of the roads that were taken, not taken, and probably starting to make more conscious choices about which roads to take, because I'm aware that whatever roads I do take now, in 20 years' time when I'll be sitting in another setting, you know, I'll be reflecting back on the choices I've made then or that I'm making now, because that will shape the sort of pattern in my life. So there is something about with Amoghasiddhi that reminds us that we are agents. We have agency. You know, we make choices, and there is something about coming to terms with that. And I suppose I used to work a lot with young people And for me, sort of seeing them or witnessing them maturing into adults, because I was working with a 16 to 18 years old. And there is something about increasingly taking responsibility for what we do, for what choices we take, and having that, embracing the agency that we have, embracing that. And the question I've posed yesterday that we would look at is, so who is it who makes choices? Now, who is that who makes choices? And who is it that boldly goes? Who takes action? And it's 2021, and I haven't seen my family now for almost 2 years. It'll be in July 2 years because of the pandemic. They live in the Czech Republic. And, I'm living in the UK. And I'm thinking, who made this choice? And it was kind of decision taken by my younger self. So when I was 19, I've decided to come to the UK, and this is where I am over 20 years later. So sometimes there is this who makes choices, that we then are to live with. So the question of whom is very alive for us and in our lives and in our spiritual practice. It's worth pondering about who is it that makes choices, who is it that boldly goes. And Bhante Sangharakshita, the founder of the order, he made this statement which comes up quite a lot. It's being quoted quite frequently, but it's just so relevant for this work that Amoghasiri represents for us. And Bhante says, we are really a bundle of selves, loosely tied with name and address. So there is this, we might have some kind of equilibrium. We might sometimes have all these selves kind of in some sort of harmony. And recently I've experienced changing address, and oh my goodness, does it shake up the different parts within? So we can see that changes. Or sometimes in the past, women used to change name when they married. Now it might be different. Now it might be both men and women might change their name. But there is something about that change that then might shake something up. In the Buddhist order, when we get ordained, Bodhilila, Prajnanita, we get these new names. And again, that shakes up, what is actually the bundle underneath that it gets tied to a particular name, particular address. There is this really funny poem by Louis MacNeice. Let me read it to you, and I'll tell you why it tickles me. So it's called The Taxis. In the first taxi, he was alone. Tra-la. No extras on the clock. He tipped 9 pence, but the cabbie, while he thanked him, looked askance as though to suggest someone had bumped a ride. In the second taxi, he was alone, tra-la. But the clock showed 6 pence extra. He tipped according, and the cabbie from out his muffler said, make sure you have left nothing behind, tra-la, between you. In the third taxi, he was alone, tra-la, but the tip-up seats were down, and there was an extra charge of 1 and 6 pence and an odd cent that reminded him of a trip to Cannae. As for the fourth taxi, he was alone. Tra-la. When he hailed it, but the cabbie looked through him and said, I can't, tra-la, well, take so many people, not to speak of the dog. So there is this, you know, we present ourselves as one person, but there might be a whole bundle within us. And I like in that poem, including a dog. So it is just all sorts of creatures that make us when we look under the lid into ourselves. So big part of spiritual practice is a real important process of integration. And that very much relates to Amoghasiddhi. So we can think of integration as really starting our spiritual practice, in a way, taking off with our spiritual practice. And there is a real need for integration. And what that requires is just even getting ourselves on a cushion first thing in the morning. You know, there is a that requires a certain level of integration. Carving time and space for practice. You could even say, you know, carving time for the weekend to do a retreat. You know, that requires a certain level of integration and saying yes to something, saying no to other things. So it might also be spending time with spiritual friends or with friends, people that you want to be with, that you want to support, that you want to build up closeness with. So again, that might require a lot of integration. So integration is about setting actively time aside to really reflect what is it that is important to us. And what's important is that we do that actively, we reflect actively rather than just being in a soup of thoughts. I think I'm a master of a soup of thoughts. You know, like the day goes by and I think, oh, I've thought about so many things and got absolutely nowhere. Because actually, what I was doing was ruminating and not reflecting. So, integration requires this active reflection rather than just being in the soup of thought. We call it papancha. When we just, you know, our mind just keeps going blah, 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 and somehow we just go with that and get swayed by what it is saying and believing that everything that is being said is actually true, and that might not be the case. So when we think about integration, we can think of it as a foundational practice. It's very important at the start of spiritual practice. There is a lot of integration that needs to take place. But you could say that the whole spiritual life actually requires deeper and deeper levels of integration. And when we engaging in that, what we're really doing is training in sort of inner integrity and continuity. So there is some kind of congruence between different parts within ourselves. So we can become more collected rather than dissipated. And our energy gets collected rather than dissipated. I once visited an exhibition and I can't quite remember what exhibition it was, but there was this one image which was absolutely stunning, and it was these pins organized in a mandala, in a circle around a point, and it was so beautifully organized about a central point. And I think sometimes when I think of integration, for me, it's that image where you see things organized really beautifully around the center, and it's quite clear what that center is. And the force is centripetal rather than centrifugal. You know, it goes inwards and it works in harmony within rather than getting dissipated outside and kind of leaking out like a jar with holes. Yeah. So with integration, it's so important to have a central point, some kind of unifying threat. And often we talk of meaning and purpose. Having meaning and purpose is really hard to integrate if there is nothing in the center. And that's why I love that image that I was describing. It's because all the pins were beautifully organized around a central point, and they were all sort of in relation to that central point. Each pin was in relation to the central point. And this is different to trying out different versions of ourselves. And I think, you know, in some ways that's part of growing up when we are teenagers. It's all about trying different versions and kind of seeing what it is, which ones versions fit with us, which don't. But what happens is that, you know, like for me, I would call myself middle-aged now. And but this teenager is still there sometimes, you know, this kind of like, I'm still trying out sometimes different versions to ourselves. And it's thanks to beautiful friends sometimes that you can have, that they can bear and witness this process of you looking and becoming to integrate a bit more, in the sense that you trying to work out what that central point is that you want to orient your life around. And when we reflect, I will pose this question for us to reflect on. But it's useful to ponder to what extent is there a clear meaning and purpose in your life? And we'll have time set aside for that. And if you like me in any way that I've been searching for a meaning, you know, like those teenage years, I was kind of so driven by wanting to find out what this meaning is, that it's really important to ask this question with kindness and compassion. And sometimes when it's not quite clear yet, that there is enough kindness and compassion and trust that with time, it can emerge, and with time and conditions that will become more clear. So in a way, Amoghasiri, what he stands for is for us to lead life as a mandala, where we might have a particular pattern organized around a central point or central axis. And we can think of the integration on different levels as well. It's both related to moral agency. So it's, you know, recognizing that we have an effect. What we do has an effect. And it has an effect on our consciousness. So what's happening for us, how our consciousness unfolds. And it has an effect on other people's consciousness and how their consciousness unfolds. And it's a little bit like trees and the roots underneath the ground. They all meet. And I think trees are to be communicating through roots with each other. So it's a little bit like that for us in our life, where, yeah, we are like trees with our roots. We have an effect on others and we affect each other. And we have an effect on the world as well. So when we're thinking about this integration, we can think of it on a kind of horizontal level, where we can face up to ourselves. So we can really recognize, you know, what is it that are our strengths? What are our highs? What are our lows? What are our positive habits? What are our negative habits? What are our real deep-rooted sort of things that we would like to change. So there is this real self-awareness, and that allow that comes with taking responsibility for that horizontal integration. And it's worth saying that in Buddhism, what we're trying to do is really let go of this self-view or self-clinging, because that's what causes us suffering. But this self-clinging or self-view is itself very exclusive and selective. You know, like if I'm reflect on myself, often I might leave all those things I don't like, I leave those out because they're not convenient to hear. They're not nice to be reminded of. And if they can stay somewhere in a drawer, let's lock them there. So if you do that, there will be no horizontal integration. So there will be, we have to have a look. We have to have a look. And it's important that we look for that integration to take place. But there is also vertical integration. And what happens is that it's not just what we know of ourselves, these repetitive habits or social interactions, but it's this vertical dimension that might come up in dreams, in meditation sometimes, or if we have very strong aesthetic experience, that might come up. And it's just allowing more of what we're not conscious of to come through and get to know that. And I think Amoghasiddhi, when we really think about Amoghasiddhi, it's especially this vertical integration that he points us towards or gives us a sense of, this is possible, this is where you can go, and when you go there, it's a happy place to be. Yeah. So to boldly go really means integrating and having a compass and a direction and allowing that unfolding. And this integration, I would argue, is a powerful emblem that's represented by the double vajra. And I'll just share with you that image of the double vajra. So hopefully you can see the Vishvavajra. Vishvavajra. So Vishva means the universe as we experience it. So that's what Vishva is. And Vajra is thunderbolt or diamond. And sometimes we talk of Vishvavajra as the double vajra. And we talk about it as double vajra because it's made out of two vajras, two thunderbolts. And these two thunderbolts that crossed and they united in the middle. So we could think of this as a symbol of a total psychic integration, where we've got unfoldment of all potential. So it sort of symbolizes perfect harmony and balance and equilibrium. And it gets encountered when you really travel into depths of existence. And that's why Amoghasiddhi is associated with the midnight sky. You know, it's that total mysterious sky setting, which is representative of the deepest unconscious. And it can be, sometimes the Vishvavajra is like representing this primordial pattern of human consciousness. And it's like, we could think of it as the grand plan that we try to unfold in our own lives. But it's got also a more cosmological meaning, in the sense that in Buddhist cosmology, the whole universe is resting on this Vishvavajra. And what it really points out is this expansiveness of existence, universes that evolves and passes out over billions, trillions years. In Buddhist terminology, we use the word aeons. So our minds are a little bit like the universe, in the sense that we have a huge potential to be expansive and connect to that expansiveness of the universe. And in a way, you can see how this particular symbol, there is this unification of opposites. So in the middle, it's it meets together. So there is this, when you've got opposites that unify, and you've got this perfect unification, and it comes out of thinking of you and the world, or me and you, these divisions that we're constantly making, masculine, feminine, the different, you know, love and hate, these polarities that we might point out. In a way, the Vishvavajra shows you can unify these, and you can allow this unification to take place within yourself, and it takes place with the context of a more expansion. And that's where you really experience how things really are, you being part of universe and being in the midst of that expansive universe. So Amoghasiddhi is seen as immensely powerful and associated with action, but it's because, in a way, it's the unification of energies that allow release of energy. When you don't have polarization, when there is things are not being argued and energy expended on this chatter of one's mind and trying to work out what is what, that flow of energy can be immensely liberating. And in a way, that requires courage. So we're back to that symbolism of the hand and the Abhaya Mudra. So I'll just share an image of Amoghasiddhi, where we have both the Vishvantra and we've got the Mudra. So integration is possible. Amoghasiddhi is saying, you know, this can take place on all sorts of levels. It can be horizontal, vertical. It's got no boundaries. And you've got you need courage in all of this. You need courage. And I'll finish with talking, with reading from David White, who talks about courage. And I think he expresses it quite nicely in relation to what we were speaking. He says, courage is the measure of our heartfelt participation with life, with another, with a community, a work, a future. To be courageous is not necessarily to go anywhere or do anything, except to make conscious those things we already feel deeply, and then to live through the unending vulnerabilities of those consequences. So for us to do integration, for us to think and step into this path where we are willing to look at different parts of ourselves. We look at what's there and we begin to take responsibility and make conscious choices. We need courage and we need an enormous amount of kindness as well. So what I propose is that we meditate together now, and we'll do metta bhavana, so loving kindness meditation, in order for us to open ourselves to kindness and to this more compassionate way of being in the world, before we do a little bit of reflection afterwards. So I'll just say, I don't know if you can see from on my shrine, I might have a more of a close-up of the shrine. I don't know if you can see the picture or the close-up, but here on the shrine there is Amoghasiddhi with his fearless gesture, with his Abhaya Mudra. And what I really love is I always like to put on my shrine this stone, which is almost like in the shape of a heart. And for me, it's always a reminder that heart, kindness, compassion are part of wisdom. And Amoghasiddhi, although I would say he present himself as full of action and power, it's actually, he is full of love and compassion, which enables him to be so powerful and so full of spontaneous action. And some of the symbolism is he sometimes wears a scarlet robes, so that scarlet color sometimes represents this compassion. So let's meditate. I'll settle us in and then just ring bells for 5 stages of metta bhavana, loving kindness. And for the different stages, what I would say is, when we bring ourselves to mind, and when we bring a friend to mind, when we bring a familiar stranger to mind, when we bring a difficult person in mind, and then progressively the whole world and different beings, what I would like you to really explore in this meditation is, what comes up when you bring the different people in mind and turning kindness to that? Because what we're looking at is taking all of it, you know, all of ourselves on the path. So if, for example, in the stage with a familiar stranger, you might see, you know, like a bit of a dismissive kind of boredom arising, well, just bring kindness to that, because that's an aspect what might happen. And we've got then an agency when we notice what happens. We've got agency to transform those. And in the same way that if hatred or even malice or just simple irritation arises in relation to a difficult person, again, there is that turning towards that with kindness, and it's okay for that to arise, because there is part of us being humans, having this range of emotions, range of feelings, range of reactions. So really what we're learning and what we're doing is we're learning to be aware of what's there and then have that capacity to work with that over time and develop that. That's our training ground. So yeah, find a position that will support you, meditation posture that will support you in the next about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. It might be that you're sitting. It might be that it's more kind for yourself to be lying down. It might be that you're sitting on the floor or you're sitting on a chair. So just letting yourself settle. In the posture that will serve you. You might want to even take a deep breath in and a deep breath out, just to fully become present to you here and now. And also being aware that we're in the midst of our community, practicing together. And supporting each other in our practice. And we're in this landscape that we've created through the dedication ceremony yesterday, where we protect it by lotuses and vajra walls. And we in the presence of our Mugga city. Who with his gentle mudra of abhaya, fearlessness, just creates that protective space for all of us. And bringing your attention to your breathing area, noticing the chest expanding, moving with each breath. And in that area, there's the heart. It's got that capacity. capacity to connect through our whole being and to others too. Inviting loving kindness to percolate through your whole being. So a period of loving kindness meditation. You might want to change your posture, or it might feel okay to remain in the same posture. But we'll have a period of reflection. And you can sit or lie down, or you can write if that's helpful for you. But maybe if we can take that meditative state that we've cultivated, and the kindness and compassion into our reflection. So imagine that you're talking to a friend or a group of friends, and you want to just give them a gist of your life. Maybe you could reflect what might be the three turning points in your life as you see it at the moment that you would talk about. So three turning points in your life. And just see what emerges for you. What would those three turning points be? What would you say to your friends? Maybe you can notice how invested you are in a particular story that you tell yourself and others. Maybe you can notice what gets left out. What doesn't get mentioned? Maybe we can consider whether we have a sense of a central point or meaning and purpose around which our life or decisions orient themselves around. That central point in our lives around which integration can take place. What I'd like to do is invite you, if you feel like it, to join me in a mantra for Amoga City. And in a way, it's a way of either calling on Amoga City, or it could be cultivating relationship with that fearlessness and potential in ourselves that Amoga City might represent. Or it could be just an offering to Amoga City from the practice we've been doing.
Om Namo Gassiriya Hung. 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 And just sitting a few minutes, absorbing the morning practice together. So this brings our morning practice in this particular setting together to a close. And your retreat continues in the next while before we meet again. Our retreat collectively continues. So take wise actions about what to do with the next 4 hours. So it's nourishing for your reflection, nourishing for your heart and mind. And we'll meet together at 4 o'clock. And we'll have opportunity to meet in groups in that time.